This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Auto Repair Marketing Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, but your host today, Kim Walker with Shop Marketing Pros. Brian is actually at this very moment, he is doing an Ask Me Anything with Lucas Underwood and David Roman. He was thinking he was going to be in here, but that was already in the works as well. So you've got me today and my amazing guests, Gene Bradley and Patrick Weedman. But before we get into telling their top tier story, I want to pause and give our sponsors a shout out.
This episode is sponsored by ShopBoss. Manage and grow your shop with top features like integrated payments from 360 Payments. Are you ready to convert clients to members? AppFueled specializes in creating custom apps tailored specifically for professional auto repair businesses. Visit appfueled.com to get started today. Keep your shop top of mind on the mobile device they love.
Okay, here we go. We are back with Gene and Patrick, and they've been a client of ours for several years. But when we were talking with our CSMs recently, we were like, hey, we've got tons of clients with incredible stories. Y'all tell us, who should we be interviewing on the podcast? And of course, you two were on that list. And I knew that you did events, obviously. But when they started talking about some of the things that you're doing, I started looking deeper back into your story. I was reinvigorated with excitement for talking with both of you today, just because, I don't know, it just feels like such a great American business story of families and community and just loving on people and doing the right thing. But when I was reading the about on your website, which, by the way, this will be linked in the show notes, I wanted to find out what I didn't know, and I was pleasantly surprised. But I have to ask first, what is your uncle's name? Uncle what?
Uncle Pat.
We never put his name in there?
Oh my gosh.
I didn't see his name. It's just uncle. And I'm like, well, it's not Bob, because Bob's your brother. He's already retired, right? So uncle what?
Uncle Pat.
Pat. Okay. I thought you said pot. Okay. Pat. Uncle Pat. So it all started with Uncle Pat.
You may need a translator for my accent.
People tell me all the time I sound like cornbread, so you might need one for me too sometimes. So it's all good. But I just love, like, it was Patrick, you started working at your uncle's garage and then he sold. I'm telling your story. You should be telling the story. But did I read that there's six siblings and all of them have at one point in time worked in the shop that you've started?
All but one.
All but one. Okay. And so, Patrick, you're the owner. Gene, you're his sister. And then there's Bob, who is retired. And how old is Bob now? Because when I read, it was like 85 or 88 or something.
Oh, we have two Bobs.
There's two Bobs.
Oh my gosh. What is happening here?
Both Bob Weedmans too.
Shenanigans.
My father, who we hired. So we started in 98. We hired my father, I think in 2000, after he retired again from one of his other careers. So he was probably well into his 60s when he started with us. Well, if I did the math right, but so he'll be 91 in August. And we were just having a discussion about trying to keep him from jacking up cars for the state inspections.
You just said that. And we were laughing before we hit record about Patrick and I, our math abilities. And I will say that when I read that, I was like, do they have a brother that's 80 something years old? Like, that's like,
it's a big family, huh?
It's a big family. Yeah. Wow.
No, so my brother Bobby and I started in 98. He got out in 2016 is when I bought him out, and he kind of retired and slowed down a little bit. He was burnt out. So, but Jeannie started with us in 05, Gene?
Yeah, when you moved into the new building.
Well, I'm going to tell you, Brian and I have been married 27 years this July. We've worked together 24 of those. And people are always like, you work with your husband? Like, I don't know how you do that. I have no issues working with my husband, but to work with my brother, okay, that's another story. So
what do we always say? That there are certain family members we can work with, and others that might be a little more difficult, perhaps. But we all still have Thanksgiving together. We're good. We have never taken business out and put it into the family, except when you did the towing and you had to leave and go tow in the Christmas dinner or something.
Oh my gosh. Well, I say all of that, but my brother did work for us when we had our shop, and my mom did too. My mom was our shuttle driver, and my brother was our, what would you call it? Like, he detailed the cars and he'd run and grab parts, but then we did okay. So it all worked out. But I just love, and I want to pull this in throughout the conversation, but the way that, and I don't know that you get this from corporate shops or like chains, you know, I guess it depends on who the manager is or whatever. But when you have a family running a business, your love for people, excellence, and I'm not saying customer service, but the customer experience, I think that that's two different things. The way that you bake that in is top tier. So I'm really proud that we get to the opportunity to partner with you on your marketing, but to have you here on the podcast today. I think that sometimes in our automotive space, there's a lot of just, you know, there's always just stress and chaos and worry about the economy and worry about this. But when we can tell these positive stories and just share ideas with people, it's really just inspiring. So I love that. All right. So you guys have Advanced European and Grove Street. You have a third location as well. So I don't know if your events are in all three places, but as we're talking about it, just share whatever you want. I know that Breaks for Breasts is big for y'all. Pan Can, I read about that. I didn't know about your mom's story with multiple cancer battles. The bike-a-thons that you've done, Ladies Night, you just had, we actually rescheduled this podcast recording so that we could do it after, but also the Santa Foundation. And there's more, but it's like, I always said that I did so many events at our shop that people were confused if our shop was an event center or a shop. And I feel like you are the event shop. So I love how you've chosen events from your heart. Talk to us. Let's just start out with, just because it just grabbed me and I want to go ahead and just talk about your family, but how you choose the types of events. Like, what causes you to pick the events that you're doing? Like, I know that Breaks for Breasts is important because your mom and Pan Can, but just how her story plays an impact in the choices for the events that you've done. And then there are events that you do that don't relate to that. Just let's talk about how you choose which events you're doing, either one of you.
Well, a big part of how we grew up was watching my mother donate her time. And she did, what was that? Something about fishes, some giving people rides to doctor's appointments. She did so many volunteer things. She was always the Girl Scout mom, the Boy Scout mom, all of those things. So we grew up in a culture of giving back to the community in whatever way we could. So it's something that Patrick grabbed onto early on, very early on in the business. And we have always, and I say we, but it's really Patrick. I just kind of live in his world. But we have always said yes to really almost any cause. But the ones that we really focus on are, like you said, the ones that speak to our heart even more. When the Breaks for Breast program came across our radar, that was a no-brainer. And we knew that we had to make that work. And we did that in honor of our mother. And then we encouraged donations to the Pancreatic Cancer Foundation because of the lack of research and things like that. So that, because she had pancreatic cancer, and that was ultimately what she passed away from. She had survived, I don't even know, multiple cancers. So anything to do with the cancer world too, you know, any bike-a-thon or anything like that, we're always jumping on board for that. And then she also was involved in delivering turkeys for Thanksgiving. So, and I forget what organization did that, if it was Friends for Franklin, Friends of Franklin, maybe. And so kind of an offshoot of that is the Franklin Food Pantry. So that is also something that we've become very involved in. I was fortunate to be invited to sit on one of their committees. So they have like an advancement committee, I think. I never remember the official name. So that is to help them to raise the funds that they need to take care of our community. And they are an amazing organization. And then the Santa Foundation kind of, you know, comes along in that as well. And so having the tree with the little mittens with what the kids want for Christmas, those kinds of things. So those really are very close to our heart. My mother was a very strong personality, and she was very outgoing, very gregarious. She had more friends than probably we ever realized. Like, we had no idea. At her wake, the line was down the sidewalk. So we met so many wonderful people, and she impacted so many people. So we continue that in her tradition. So part of that grew into the ladies' night, I think, because I think, and I don't know how Patrick will feel about this, but I feel like I have a pretty strong personality, kind of like my mother in some ways. I'm not as outgoing as she was, but she would drag me on the adventures. So, so the ladies' night was something that, again, was very easy to grab onto. And I don't even know how we first came up with the idea. I guess we just decided we were going to do it.
It's been over 15 years, at least, since we've been doing it for, I can't remember how long, but I think we saw the need. We saw that some women would come in and feel uncomfortable. And I mean, it's not a marketing thing. The ladies' night is not a marketing event by any means. It's, we have stations set up and we just want them to be informed, you know, and we tell them, look, if your shop tells you you need brake pads and rotors, this is what they are. If they tell you it needs a ball joint, this is what it is. This is a catalytic converter. This is why they're expensive when they get stolen. So that's kind of, we wanted to give back because we saw people, women in particular, getting a little nervous, maybe, and asking questions. And this goes back to probably 2008, maybe. It could be 20 years we've been doing it, Jeannie.
I think so, yeah. Because I would hear the people when they would call, and the women would say, well, you know, my husband usually takes care of all of this. I don't know anything. And my back would just straighten up and I'd say, we're going to teach you. And you will know by the time you leave here what you need to do for your car.
Because not every woman has a husband. You know, there are single parents out there that, and I don't want anybody to get taken advantage of. If they can go back to their shop and the shop says, you need this, and they can register in their mind, all right, I saw that before. I know what that is. Maybe they can ask an educated question and a follow-up question for that shop and their shop and maybe get the answer they're looking for, or maybe they feel a little uneasy with that answer, you know. And just, I hate to say that some shops still do what they did back in the 80s, but there are some out there, and unfortunately.
It always blows my mind because we still hear, like you're saying, today in 2026, that women are still feeling uncertain, nervous, anxious, taken advantage of. And I'm like, how is this still happening? We were known at our shop, which we closed in 2008, as the Triangle, which is Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, that was called the Triangle, the Triangle's most female-friendly shop. And that came from, like you were saying, Jean, you were sitting there, you hear what they're saying. I heard a lady saying to Michael, who was our service advisor, who is now our marketing service advisor at Shop Marketing Pros, I overheard him saying, what brought you in here? How'd you find out about us? And the lady said, my coworkers say you're the most female-friendly shop in the Triangle. And I heard that and grabbed hold of it and was like, oh my gosh. And so I love that, Patrick, a few minutes ago, you said that the ladies' event is not a marketing event. But then as y'all started explaining, it's an education event. By way of everything is marketing, but what you're doing, the heart of it, the essence of why you put it on was to educate those women. So, and I'm going to come back to this in a little bit, so don't answer. But if I understand correctly, you had a waiting list for that event, like got full. So, I mean, you can say it was not a marketing event, but something happened that caused you to have a waiting list. We're going to come back to that. I want to stick to the origins. And so you talked about your mom. Before we dig deeper, I'm just curious, let's talk about Uncle Pat, because there were some lessons, I guess, Patrick, that you learned early on from Uncle Pat. What lessons from Uncle Pat still exist today, and maybe specifically as it relates to y'all running events?
Well, the biggest one is basically it was do unto others as you would like done unto you. Treat everybody the same. That's what I learned earlier. I started working with, I was probably 13 or 14 years old. He had a gas station, and in that gas station, he had a lot of bays. So he did a lot of auto repair. He had a taxi business. He had all sorts of crazy stuff going on, but he was a serial entrepreneur. But one of the things that I remember as I got older and I started driving the tow truck for him was we did AAA. We did a lot of AAA. It was a very busy towing operation. And AAA, it's the discount of, if you're doing a tow for $30, AAA will pay you $10 to do the same tow. But his philosophy was to treat those people the same as you would for that person for that $30 tow, because you don't know who you're dealing with. They could become a customer later on, even if you're towing them to another shop. The way you treat them is reflective on my company, and I want those customers maybe to think about us next time when they break down. So the big thing that I learned from him was do unto others as you would like done unto you. I mean, it's the golden rule, and it's done us so well. I mean, just sticking to that one simple sentence is just, for years, it's helped us.
ShopBoss is software built by shop owners for shop owners. ShopBoss is the shop management software that works the way you need it to, so you can reach your biggest goals without slowing down. Help your techs fix cars faster with intuitive inspection tools that supercharge your operations and keep vehicles cycling through your base. Get into ShopBoss mode with an ROI dashboard that gives you critical information at a glance and updates in real time. And accelerate your payments with BossPay, powered by 360 Payments, by giving your customers more ways to pay. From text to pay, remote payments and consumer financing, to compliance, surcharging, and PayPal and Venmo mobile pay options. BossPay puts your customers in the driver's seat and keeps your business moving. Plus, their entire team is on deck to help you simplify your day-to-day, flag more hours, and generate more revenue. Other software makes you work, but ShopBoss works for you. Independent auto repair shops, get ready to transform your business with AppFueled. It's time for your professional auto service shop to have its own customer loyalty app. AppFueled will build an app that launches a custom loyalty program for your shop in 30 days or less, fully integrated with your point-of-sale system. Bring Fortune 500 level customer retention strategies to your business without the Fortune 500 budget. Many shops are enjoying the benefits. Our app engages your customers with a loyalty ladder, enticing them to climb the next rung, coming back more often and spending more each visit, all with your own app. Build loyalty with your customers, to your brand, and boost your shop's growth. Get your first app in 30 days or less, all without breaking the bank. Ready to start? Let AppFueled take your business to the next level. Go to appfueled.com or meet founder Jeremy Glasgow and book your complimentary app vision session at appfueled.com/Jeremy. That's appfueled.com/Jeremy.
Now, Gene, you joined in 2005, I think y'all just said, but then Patrick, you referenced events going back to 2008, and there's like this kind of this thread throughout that I feel like there, you can always reference something from Uncle Pat, something from your mom. But were you the events starter, Patrick, or was that you, Gene? Like, who put the first event together and what brought you to do that?
We did it together, I think. So when Jeannie first started working for us, she was part-time and she was working the front desk. So she had a lot of interaction with these women that were coming in. So I think she brought the idea to us, to me and my brother and I. That's when we've had the first one, was probably right around 07, 08, I'm guessing. It was a ladies' night, yeah. We've done teen night, ladies' night. We do a smaller scale version for Boy Scouts, you know, if they're looking for their automotive badge or whatever, we've done that. But the ladies' night is the recurring theme. Teen night, a lot of times what we found out is it's the parents make them go, and there's not a lot of interest by the kids that are actually there. It's the parents standing behind them, slapping them in the head, saying, pay attention, get off your phone. But they need to, and there are some kids there that ask questions and they get engaged. And so it's, even sometimes if they're not, you feel like they're not paying attention, I think by osmosis, it's kind of happening in their background that they're listening. Maybe they learned something, a little tidbit that they can, you know, if they get a flat tire, they know how to change it.
Are y'all seeing a trend of like teenagers that don't want to drive. I couldn't wait. I got my permit at 14 and a half years old. I could not wait to drive. So you're seeing that too?
Yep.
That's wild.
Tom that works with us, he's been with us since 1999. His son is graduating high school, actually next week, I think. And he just got his license maybe 6 months ago. I skipped football practice to go get my license.
Right. I went on my birthday.
The day I was eligible. 16 and a half. Not anymore. It's different.
Yeah. I was 14 and a half to get my permit, but at 15, I could go get my actual driver's license. And you can bet that on my birthday, I was first in line. I just could not. But a friend of mine just posted on Facebook yesterday or the day before that her son got his, I don't know if it was permit or his actual driver's license, but she's like, he won't even use it. He won't even drive. I'm calling you Jeannie now, by the way. Like, I don't know what else to do. So,
well, now you're part of the family coming for Thanksgiving.
I'm part of the family now. So when Jeannie joined, it was a couple of years later, y'all did your first ladies' night. So that was the first event. I'm just curious, when you did your first one, do you remember, were there any lessons you learned? Like, oh, we're definitely going to do this next time, or we're not going to do this next time. Like, talk a little bit about the aftermath of the event and what you would do differently or keep doing. Or
I think we still, to this day, after every event, we kind of have a postmortem and what worked, what didn't. I mean, we're always fine tuning it, but there were definitely some things that first one. I remember how long it was, and we spent too much time at certain stations. And I'm sure we eliminated some stations, but you learn after every one. It's tough to keep it condensed because there's a lot of information and people have questions. So it just extends it, and which we're fine with. I'll stay till whenever. But you learn after every one and you tweak after every one. Like, there's still, and you know, like the last one, I think the last one we had was earlier this month, but that was our first part of the presentation was on ADOS. Now we've incorporated that into it. So with every one, they're very similar, but there's always, you got to figure out, all right, well, if I'm adding that, what am I taking away? Because people don't want to be there all night either.
And we graduated from having the sheet over the door with a projector to an actual TV screen with a slideshow. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, the world changes, AI comes into the, you know, there's always something new, something different. So you definitely, I love that you said that you do a postmortem. We called it a debriefing, but the same thing. We always, even today, we still, every time we go to a conference, we teach a class, we'll talk about, you know, what do we need to adjust? So what does that look like? Is that like everyone involved just like puts things into a Google Doc? Do y'all have an actual meeting? When is it after the event? What does the postmortem process look like?
Well, we meet every Tuesday.
We have a standing meeting anyway, so we definitely debrief there. But also, just as we're putting things away, we'll be talking about what worked, what didn't work. Yeah, we forgot to take a group picture this past one. The most obvious thing, we didn't do it.
And that was on the agenda.
It was. But then you get so busy and you're talking to the people and you're distracted. And
yeah, people are asking you questions. And
yeah, so it's easy to derail ourselves. But we have another event at our Easton shop called Shoveltown Auto Service. So that's on June 18th. So we'll make sure we do it then. So, yes.
But we have a running doc. So we have an agenda that we use. And then we just tweak it, you know, because we meet every Tuesday. When it starts becoming closer, we use EOS, so it's kind of like a structured meeting. So as the date starts creeping up, it's on our radar and we start putting things together. And it's usually the same agenda with tweaks. You know, time-wise, we try and keep everything running on time. I talk too much sometimes, so Jeannie kind of gives me the hook. And
we're the same, Patrick. That's me too. Absolutely. Yeah, we follow EOS as well, so I'm very aware of your meeting structure. So it's part of your IDS, the issue, discuss, solve. That's awesome. I love that. And I think it's important for our listeners. You know, there are going to be people listening who have never done an event before at all. People who do events just like you all the time, but we can all take something away. And it very well could be just the intentional pause after the event to analyze what worked, what didn't work. So I think that's really important to talk about and highlight. What about You know, when you put it on an event, oftentimes it's after hours, it might be on a weekend, it's very often not during working hours, and that plays an impact on your team. So depending on your company culture, what that looks like, what are you doing to get your team bought in? Because you need their participation to make it successful. So do either one of you have anything to say about getting your team involved and bought in?
I think because of our culture, all we have to do is ask. And they say yes. They know it's good for the community. We try and be very intentional with the people we hire so that they fit into our culture. I don't think we've ever had a problem with whoever we ask saying no. If somebody couldn't come, if we asked them and they couldn't make it, it was because they had a prior commitment. It was never because they didn't want to.
Well, again, referencing EOS, right person, right seat, right? So when you're hiring, I also know that if you're EOS, you have solid core values in place. And anybody that's looking to be hired on to be a part of your team, they're probably checking your social media. They see, oh, they're doing all these events. And while it is great for the community, it's great for your shop, but it's great for your team members as well. It's continually bringing in new clients, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said, we don't have a lot of staff that has to be there. The manager is always there just because he wants people to see his face. And, you know, the service advisors will hang around for a little while because for the same reason. And we'll even have people like the last one, as soon as we open the door, someone would come in, "Where's Mike? Where's Mike? I want to see Mike."
Oh, yeah. That was great.
"I want to meet Mike."
That would be us too. His name is Michael. So it would be the same thing. "Where's Michael?" I love that. That's great. Okay. So I'm going to come back to the ladies event that you just had, where you said it's not a marketing event, which I honor and value and respect. It's an education event. However, something happened with the marketing, or it's just the word of mouth, or I don't know. Talk to me about your ladies event specifically, because it just happened and you had a waiting list. So how many people had to register to fill up your list? How'd you get them to register? Nobody wants to register anymore. Like, just Jeannie, spill the tea. What are you doing to make that happen?
Well, we did a lot of promotion on social media, and we pulled pictures and information from the last ones we did so that people could see what it was going to be like. Because you don't want to walk into an event and have no idea what to expect. So it was important to show what we were doing. So we used Facebook and Instagram a lot. We put signs in the front offices. The service advisors talked it up with customers. And because we've done it repeatedly, there was already some awareness. And then we also took advantage of Facebook ads and did an ad. So we only did that for 4 days. We had to shut that down because the way that we were having people register for the most part was on a Google Doc. So it was a form and they would fill in their information. We came in that Monday and I think on Friday, we might have had like 25-ish people. By Monday, we had 50. And we thought, oh my gosh, how are we going to do this? So we were not panicked, but we were concerned. And so we did have to think about creating the waiting list. So we did, in social media, we kind of shut off the active looking for more people to participate. But then the other thing we did is, because we had captured their emails, we sent out an email about a week or so before the event and said, "Hey, just wanted to remind you that you expressed interest. And are you really coming?" So basically, you know, confirm that you're coming. So we got confirmations back, not from everybody, which we expected, because you know how it is. Life is busy and you see something and you're like, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. And you sign up, or you've got a Facebook event, which we had created, and you click going or interested. But then the date comes and you're like, nah, I don't really want to do that. So we had to gauge how many people did we really expect, so we would know, could we continue to add people on? So ultimately, we ended up with 22 people. We had a couple that were no-shows, but we also had a couple of people show up that never signed up. And that was okay. So it does. They were just like, "I thought I signed up." So it was a lot of social media drove it. We have very active local Facebook groups, like All About Franklin, things like that. So, and people just shared it among themselves. And a couple of people brought friends. So it was like a 2-for-1 kind of a deal. So it was really just creating all of that awareness and then keeping it out there continuously. So I think, you know, because we started 6 weeks ahead of time or so, and then really ramped it up 5 weeks, 4 weeks, and then kind of had to back off a week or so before because we were like, if we have more people, I don't know where we're going to put them all. And then we were thinking we might have to split them into 2 groups and rotate through the stations, but that presents its own challenges. And we didn't know. And I knew Patrick wanted to be the one to present all the information. So, and he's really good at it. Yes, he's a really good teacher. He really is.
But 20 is probably the sweet spot. You get more than 20 because you have a car up on a lift and you're trying to cycle people through to see what's underneath there so I can show them different things. And once you get beyond 20, in our experience, I mean, 15 to 20 is the sweet spot. You get beyond 20 and it's, they can get unruly.
Yeah. Well, you talked about taking pictures. You talked about, do you have a checklist of things that are happening before, during, and after to keep?
Multiple checklists, multiple yellow sticky notes. Yep, they laugh at me with my sticky notes, but that's how we keep track of things sometimes.
I'm just curious, what is in the messaging when you're marketing the event that causes these women who are running businesses, running families, working, carpooling, living their life, whatever, playing pickleball, whatever they're doing, what's in the messaging that causes you to get to a full registration and a waiting list where these women see what you've put out and they're like, I'm going to that. I got to go. Why are they coming? What are you doing at this event?
I think it's the message is education, but it's also we're enticing them to come behind the scenes. So we used that phrase a lot. And I think people are always curious about what's behind that door. You know, if I'm out front, because I sit way out back now, as I've, you know, moved my office around and we have more people. But if I go out front and I'm talking to a customer, the first thing, well, maybe the second thing I'll do after I hug them, because I probably haven't seen them in a long time, is say, have you ever seen the shop? And then just open the door. And the look on their faces when they see everything that's going on behind the scenes is incredible. And then they appreciate so much more when you're calling and talking to them. But well, your car is in the shop. They can picture that. And then if they've come to Ladies Night, they know what that brake rotor is. They know the function of the caliper. So I think people want to be empowered. And to me, that's a big word, is to empower people to make the decisions. And like Patrick said, it's not like a push for here, make an appointment, you know, do that as soon as you talk to us. It's more about just giving them knowledge. And do we hope they become our customers? Well, of course, because, you know, they're friends. And we want them all to come and join us.
Well, I think when you lead with all of that, the care, the compassion, the understanding, the education, organically, they're going to want to have you be their shop. That's just what's going to happen naturally because they're beginning to trust you in all that. I love, love, love how you talked about the behind the scenes part because we all have this kind of nosy nature in us to like know that kind of stuff, like what's really happening behind the curtain. So I was just curious, like there's some magic in your messaging that's causing those people to register. I mean, it's a lot to get someone to click a link and fill out a form and say, I'm coming. That's a commitment.
That's for a Zoom link. Imagine the commitment to go to an actual shop and show up, drive your car there. And I mean, there are people that do that for Zoom links all day long and never show up, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure. You're so right about that. I know very well of your 2 shops. You referenced the 3rd shop. I'm just curious because you said you're having an event at the 3rd shop. Whether you answer this in relation to Advanced European and Grove Street only or the 3rd location, doesn't matter to me. I'm just curious about how the different shops, because they're all named differently. So it's not one brand, even though it's one family. Do the different shops collaborate or coordinate with these events, whether it's in marketing the event or sharing team, like is there any combination of the different shops when you have these events?
The European shop is about 400 feet down the street from Grove Street. So it's very convenient to kind of cross promote the ladies' night. And then we have a new manager down at the Shovel Town. So he, well, knew, he's been there a year now. But he came to ladies' night a couple weeks ago because he's the one that's going to be at the next one, which is 2 weeks. He kind of wanted to see how it came. So he drove up. He was able to see how everything works and the logistics of it. So we do cross promote. We don't really cross promote so much with shop three because it is probably, it's 23 minutes away. So it's a little tough to do that. But I mean, it's all the same stuff. We're very lucky that the European shop is down the street because when people ask us to sponsor stuff, many times we'll say yes, and then we'll give them the logo that shows both shops.
I mean, why not? That makes sense. That's very smart. Okay, yeah, I was just curious about that. We've talked a good bit about you. You introduced various events at the beginning, but we really talked a lot about your ladies' night, but you've done many others. So I'm just curious for both of you, what has been personally your most favorite or most successful in your mind event in history of your shops?
In history, wow. I don't know. I like them all. I like the Boy Scout ones are great because their kids are usually younger. They're 9, 10, 11 years old, and they have a genuine interest. I mean, they're very mechanically inclined many times, these kids, and they just want to put their hands on things. And we have little events for them, like beanbag tosses into the old used tires. And, you know, we have tow trucks so they can crawl around on them and stuff like that. My favorite is probably still the ladies event because those people, like you said, they're all very busy. They've taken time out of their day to come and get educated, and they're all fully engaged. You know, they're there for a purpose. They want to learn. So I think for me, that's my favorite because Jeannie always passes out a paper at the end. What could we have done better? What else should we have addressed and stuff like that? I think almost everybody fills something up because they're all engaged. And that's kind of why, because you get feedback, I guess that's probably my favorite event to do of all time.
Of all time. Jeannie, what about you?
And I would say Ladies Night definitely holds a special place in our heart. And it's also partly because we've done it repeatedly. So we have a lot more experience with that. I really love our engagement with the food pantry and the Santa Foundation as well. With the food pantry, we do a lot of social media support for them. So it's not so much an event-based thing, but they had, for example, around the football Super Bowl time, they did a soup, S-O-U-P, Super Bowl contest with another food pantry. And it was a contest to see who could get the most cans donated. And so we did a fun video of tossing the soup can around and saying why we wanted them to participate. And that is just a fun way to get engagement. So we love doing things like that as well. And it's just, you know, there's so many people that need support in so many different ways. So we actually also did a different version of the teen night. It was a two-part event, and it was for an organization called the Safe Coalition. And they do a lot of support for families around addiction and mental health. It's an amazing, amazing organization. They put together a life skills event that was a series of workshops with different small business providers. And so they invited us to participate as well. So we went there and did a presentation on things like how to register your car. We talked a little bit about car insurance. I feel there were some other, like, you know, kind of basic topics that we did there. But then the next week we had them come to the shop. And then we did the kind of the same thing that we do for ladies' night, but we just kind of stripped it down a little bit. And those kids, I mean, they probably didn't get a lot of car education anywhere else. And so to be able to give back to that community specifically really spoke to my heart as well. And then the Santa Foundation is, you know, you think of it as a Christmas thing, but they do a lot of things for people all year round. So we're really engaged with that as well.
So my daughter was born on November 30th, as was Jeannie's daughter. When she was younger, first, second grade, we'd have a birthday party for her. She would want all her presents donated because she said, Christmas is right around the corner. I don't need these. She's well beyond her years. She's elderly. That's the joke. But so that started us at she was very young. So probably first or second grade, all her presents would get donated to the Santa Foundation. And that's kind of how we started getting involved in it, because I had no idea. They were providing home heating oil for people, diapers year-round. It's kind of like the food pantry without the food, if that makes sense. All the other support that goes with it. So that's kind of how it started. And that was, 2009 probably, 2008 when that started too.
I want to live in your community. It just sounds fantastic. You know, people don't think about that when they're moving somewhere. I don't think that the average Joe, if you will, goes and looks at the community events that are happening, right? They're looking at the schools, they're looking at jobs, they're looking at neighborhoods, they're looking at crime. But how does the community come together? And so I love that's a second story I didn't even expect to come out of this. So we've talked about your favorite ones. Okay. Which ones are not your, like, it could even be like, there might be this one event you forgot about. You're like, remember that time we did this one event? That was a nightmare. It was a disaster. Like, people that are listening to this need to know the good, the bad, and the ugly. Are there any least favorite events for you? And if so, what?
There is for me, Gene. I don't know. I'll let you go first if you want, if you got something.
Well, I'm curious, Gene, do you know what he's going to say? You don't have to say it.
I think I do. And it's probably the same as mine.
Pre-COVID, I used to go up. So there's a local driving school. Is that what you were thinking of, Gene?
Partly.
So there was a local driving school. I was friendly with the owner and he suggested I come up and teach the kids. I said, that's a great idea. So I had this presentation. I would do this presentation. In the beginning, it was probably an hour and a half, probably stretched a little beyond that. We went out into the parking lot after and I showed them how to change a tire and what a key lock is and the wheel lock, lug nut key. And then I had to start trimming it down because these kids didn't care. And then as it progressed, I'm like, now I'm in an hour. And now I realize I'm only there because Joe wanted a break for an hour and didn't want to have to teach these kids. And they could have cared less about me standing in front of them. Once, you know, there'd be 20, 25 kids in there. And every once in a while, there'd be one or two kids that would ask questions. But a lot of wise-ass comments and, you know, a bunch of 15-year-old kids. And I would come in after they came back from break. So for the first 15 minutes of my presentation, the kids are still kind of straggling in. And so once COVID hit, they went online with everything. And I said, you know what, Joe, I don't think I'm going to bother. I don't have the bandwidth for that. They weren't interested in it.
It takes a lot of wisdom to stop and say, that was really not the best use of my time. So, all right, Jeannie, what's yours?
Well, kind of along the same lines. I think that, not that it was my least favorite, but the toughest one to get through. I can think of one particular teen night that we did. We've had a couple of them, and they're varied in how well that they went. And there was one year that it just, the kids were definitely not engaged, and the parents literally were standing in the background and watching their kids and getting angry because the kids weren't paying attention. I would rather spend that time with people, kids, anyone that wants to be there and truly wants to learn. It did feel more like an exercise in futility. Although, like Patrick said, you hope that they got something out of it, even if they didn't realize they did in the moment. And it still is helpful. And we still, you know, gave the parents a sense of comfort that their kids maybe learned something. So yeah, we would do it again. I think we would just have to figure out how to curate it so that it was geared towards the kids that wanted to come and be here with us.
Well, you know, teenagers, it's difficult. It's a hard age. We all know they just want to be focused on their friends. They want, you know, so we can throw pizza at them. We can't, you know, it's finding the things that maybe it's like, get rid of the parents.
We've had it both ways.
I bet you have. Yeah. You do your postmortems and, you know, we live, we learn, we try to just keep doing better. And I just want to encourage you, even with those teens, you just never know. I'm wide open. Gene knows that. I put everything out there. And very often I'll put something out there and I'm like, you are so dumb. Why are you posting that? But someone will private message me. They won't like the post. They won't comment on the post. They don't share the post, but they will send me a private message and say, what you said today really made an impact on me. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know that, right? And so you just don't know that one of those teens took something to heart and they may have had a car accident and they remember, oh, well, I remember when Patrick said this at that event, you know, so we just hope that what we're doing is making an impact. Hey, what's next? What's coming up? I know you talked about the event at the Third Shop. I think you said in June. What's coming that you want to talk about as we wrap up here? What's next for Grove Street? What's next for Advanced European?
Well, we're expanding, hopefully. So we have another location under agreement. Now we'll have to take this. It's going to be a true road trip for the ladies' night. We'll have to get that one going there. So we hopefully will have that refined. We're always spitballing things. The ladies' night, really, it's so well received that that kind of is what our focus is most of the time, is the ladies' night. So we probably will have another Boy Scout one coming up. They're out now until the fall, but they have to work on stuff from September. Basically, the school year is when they're kind of in session. So we'll have some of that stuff. Jeannie, what else you got planned for me?
Oh, I don't know. You know what we never did is a grand opening at Shoveltown. And I don't think we did one at Advanced European either, other than our ladies' night, because we did a ladies' night a couple of years ago and we did it at the AER location. And then this past one, we did at Grove Street. So we kind of bounced back and forth. So I think a grand opening would be fun, or a, you know, hey, guess what? We're whatever, you know, something new and advanced or whatever.
During COVID, we used to do, what was it, Meet the Tool, Jeannie, the YouTube?
Oh, yes.
Meet the Tool, where people would email us or social media contact, and they would say, hey, what does this tool do? What does that tool do? And we would put different videos out, how to jumpstart a car. So maybe some more of that stuff. I mean, the educational stuff is great. And again, we do it for customers. We do it because it's the right thing to do. And that's kind of what we focus on.
That's great. All right. Is the fourth location a different name? Is this public? Is it private?
No, it's public. There's some environmental hurdles that we're trying to get over now, but it's going to be called Trackside Auto Service.
Okay. There you go.
But the logo will be similar. So that's one thing. So Grove Street and Shoveltown's logos are very similar. And then Trackside will be similar to that. So it's the gear. And at Shoveltown, one version we have, it has a shovel going through the middle of it. And then on Trackside, we're going to have a version where we have tracks, like train tracks, because it's right near the train tracks.
And this is in Franklin as well?
No, this is in about 15 minutes away, 15, 20 minutes away.
Opposite direction from the third location?
No, it's actually 3.3 miles away.
Another challenge.
But it's kind of a different market.
Gosh, that's a whole podcast episode in choosing your location.
Yeah, it is.
There's a lot of psychology and all this stuff. Well, listen, I so appreciate y'all taking your time. Did we leave anything out? Any last words, Jean or Patrick, that you want to share? And also tell people how they can find you.
How do they find us? We are everywhere. Grove Street is located at 79 Grove Street. So we were lucky that we got to keep the name when we moved the location. So I remember when Patrick came to me and said, so we're going to name it Grove Street Auto Repair. And it was in this little dumpy location. And I was like, well, what if you move? He's like, well, it'll be fine. It'll work out. And it did. They bought property down the street. So that worked out fine. So literally it's Grove Street Auto Repair. And then find us on our websites, which are pretty easy to do. You can just Google or ask AI to find us. We are very ChatGPT-esque. We love that. We got customers that find us that way. So AI is the wave of the future. So definitely optimizing all of that. And every location, so Advanced European Repair is actually located on the corner of Grove Street and Beaver Street. So their technical location is at 527 Beaver Street in Franklin. And then Shoveltown Auto is in Easton, technically Southeastern, on Eastman Street. So we all have Facebook pages, Instagram pages, very active on those as well.
And I will have links to the websites in the show notes so people can take a look there.
I'm sure Jeannie would be happy to share an agenda of our ladies' night, right? I mean, if you wanted to put that in the show notes and...
Yeah, absolutely.
My last word of advice, just do unto others as you would want done unto you. You do the right thing and everything comes back to you. It's an easy way to live.
An easy way to live. You're right about that, my friend. You are that.
Makes life a lot easier.
That should be a whole little video clip by itself. Patrick says, lesson from Uncle Pat. All right, friends, thank you so much. I know we're all super busy, and for you to take some time out and hang out with me this morning and talk to our audience and share that stuff. If you are not in the Auto Repair Marketing Mastermind Facebook group, Jean posts in there. So you can also find her that way as well. But thanks again for listening to the Auto Repair Marketing Podcast on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. There are some other great shows on the network, and you can find them all at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com or on the free mobile app, which is so cool. And you can find that at arpn.app to listen ad-free. Tune in for another episode next week. Until then, go fill those bays.
Thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Auto Repair Marketing Podcast with Kim and Brian Walker on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com because the best conversations in the industry start here. Marketing questions? Well, the Walkers have the answers. Check the show notes for their email.